call to order this September 18th, 2018 work session of the Springfield Planning Commission. This evening, we have one work session item. Mark Rest is here, senior planner for the city this evening, to talk to us about the development code update and give us an overview of where they are in the process. This is a long-term project, 3 years approximately, from start to finish. So with that being said, you know, if you may have questions tonight, or there may be more questions you'll think of post our first discussion, I'm sure over the term of the next 3 years, you'll have lots of opportunities for updates periodically. You'll have plenty of opportunity to ask questions as the process goes along. So with that being said, I'll turn it over to Mark.
Okay. Thank you,
Chair.
Welcome. Thank you. And commissioners, tonight's the first time I've been formally in front of this body, so thanks for having me. And I'm excited to be here tonight to kick off this exciting project. This project has been talked about for a number of years already by the City Council, and now we're moving it forward. So I have a short PowerPoint presentation tonight, and I'd like to go through that, and then there'll be plenty of time at the end to discuss and ask questions. The first thing I'd like to do is introduce you to myself a little bit and give you a little bit of my background, where I'm coming from to approach this project. I've been with the City of Springfield just a little over a year now. I've been working in the current planning and development part of the planning department, processing and development applications as they come in. So I've had an opportunity to use the code and become familiar with its intricacies and complexities and how they work. Even just in that year, I've been able to figure out and see a lot of the areas that need help in the code. A lot of them are known already by staff. You know, most of the planners' codes have notes written all over them, have pretty good ideas of things that need to be fixed. So we've kept track of a lot of those things over the years. But I've been able to experience a lot of that firsthand over the last year or so as well. Prior to being at the City of Springfield, I worked for Lane County for 7.5 years in the planning department. In total, I've been in the land development field for over 20 years. I started my career in civil engineering, so I have a bit of a background and worked a handful of years in that field. And then I've been doing planning now for about 19 years. And in that time, I've written a lot of code. At the county, I rewrote their entire procedures ordinance. That's their chapter 14. I drafted new sections of their resource zones, or their farm and forest zones, based on some changes in state law. We redrafted and cleaned up a lot of those sections, as well as I was the author of the Great Plan, which some of you may be a little bit familiar with. It's for the community of Goshen, right here on I-5, just south of Springfield, where Highway 58 takes off. The county commissioners wanted to redesignate that entire community for additional industrial development. So that was about a four-year project and created a whole new zoning code for that community. So I've had a bit of experience with the county. Prior to that, I was with the City of Bend over in Central Oregon. Back in the early to mid-2000s, I was on a project team at the City of Bend to rewrite their entire development code. I also wrote a section of new code for the City of Bend to create a medical district overlay zone for where their hospital is out there. And then, I'm just going to check my notes, make sure I cover everything here. I also have a fair amount of private sector experience. I've worked here locally with a private consultant firm that provides services to developers on projects. I had my own consulting business in Central Oregon for a handful of years and represented developers around the Northwest, as well as I worked for a large regional law firm over in Central Oregon as a planner working for it with the attorneys representing developers on large development projects. I also had the opportunity a number of years back to do my own personal real estate development project, so I have a little bit of experience from that side of things as well. I manage all of the legal, financial, and engineering aspects of that project myself. So with that breadth of experience, I think I'm bringing some different perspective and experience to bear for this project, which is going to be a large undertaking. The City Council has given direction to update the entire Springfield Development Code. They have recognized that the development code is difficult to use, implement, and understand. So I'll go in more specifically in a little bit to their specific objectives for the project. But they hope to, by clarifying a lot of the difficulties with the code, to better achieve the city's economic and housing goals for the community. Their goal is also to complete the project within 3 years, as Chair James mentioned. I personally feel that's a very ambitious timeline to do the entire development code, but I'm up for the challenge. We're going to look at ways to create efficiencies within the process and work with what we have to accomplish that goal within the timeline. As a couple of examples of other code projects that have taken place here at the city, you've seen a couple of them. The most recent one was the ADU, or accessory dwelling unit, section of the code. That was a pretty small and focused section of code. That project took just under a year to do just that focus section. You were involved, I think, with the public hearings process and making a recommendation to council on that. Another process that you recently had in front of you was for the TSP implementation project. That's a wider range of issues and different sections of the code. That project has been going on just almost 3 years total now. It just completed the public hearings process in front of you, this body, and you made a recommendation to the City Council, so that'll work through that public hearings process there as well. The last one has been going on about 3.5 years now, and that's the downtown design standard section of the code. That is, had some starts and stops along the way, and hasn't started the public hearings process yet, but will hopefully be moving forward. But that gives you an idea of timing-wise to do any code project. There's a significant time involved. So given that, and some of the limitations on resources available to the city, I'm pretty much it for this project. I've been chosen as the project manager and the person who will write the code for this. I will have some support and other team members across the city and other departments within the city to assist where needed. But I've been looking at ways of how can I get it done and meet the expectations of the council. So many of you have probably seen this graphic or something similar to it. It's a project management triangle. It highlights the interplay between the different elements of the project and how you manage those. The concept is that you never get to be the bullseye or meet the center. You don't get to perfectly meet all three of these objectives. So something has to give. So it's a balancing act. There's a little give and take. And I see part of my role as the project manager to do that balancing with the assistance of this body and the City Council to help prioritize and identify where some of the sacrifices potentially made and how things go. But really looking to be successful and within, like I said, the resources. So one of the questions I've worked with my manager, Sandy Belton's here tonight, and Tom Boyard's our interim director. We've been working a lot together. But I've asked, how can we do it differently? Given some of the examples of other code processes that have taken place and the timing that's taken place, thinking of ways to do it differently, again, create efficiencies within the process itself. I don't envision having this process be at the outset just going out broadly to the community and asking what they want or what they think needs to be fixed. I think there's been some processes that have taken place in the past, specifically one a little more recently is the DAC, the Development Advisory Committee. There was a lot of feedback provided to the city through that process. Like I mentioned, just the experience with using the code over the 30 years that it's been in place and how it's changed over time and how just the nature of development has changed over time as applied through the code has been recognized that there's ways we can update it and make it more efficient. I also don't plan on having the code be written by committee. I've been involved with processes in the past where that's attempted to be done and it's really not that effective or efficient in my mind. We tried that, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't meet the 3-year timeline. It can be very cumbersome. We've talked about a lot in terms of the timelines, and the citizen involvement component is a very important component. I have a conceptual timeline here that highlights some of the bigger chunks of work that we think needs to be done. In terms of priorities, we've identified housing as being the first priority to start with in terms of dealing with those sections of the code that affect residential development first. One of the components of housing is that we think that has a direct impact on economic development as well. They can kind of drive each other, but housing is a critical piece right now identified not just locally, but statewide and nationally as well. We also have an opportunity to partner with the state with some technical assistance where they will help us work on the very upfront piece of auditing the housing portion of the code. There's state law requirements to have clear and objective standards, which some of you may have heard that term before. It's kind of planner ease, but in terms of approval standards for housing or residential development, that the standards to approve those projects through have to be clear and objective, meaning we're not using a lot of judgment or any judgment to approve the project. So that audit piece up front with the assistance of the state, they will actually pay for a consultant that they will help us do that audit piece up front. We're currently in negotiations on finalizing the memorandum of understanding with the state for that piece. And then subsequent to that and on parallel tracks with that, we would stagger and start the other phases of the audit and then additional steps beyond that, actually drafting the new sections of the code and doing the public outreach as we move forward with the different phases. So commercial we see as coming second once we've initiated the housing residential piece. And then there's plenty of other sections of code that need to be updated as well. Some quick examples. There's the process pieces. There's emergency management components to our code that could use a little work. There's the public land zones, the mixed-use districts, parks, language, those types of things. There's a lot of other sections. There's interplay between figuring out exactly how to adopt sections, either standalone or on a phased manner. We're still trying to piece some of those specifics together.
Would industrial fall under commercial or other?
In my mind, it would be with commercial. That should really be employment land for practical purposes. There are some sections of the code that we're not planning or I wouldn't anticipate dealing with. Some quick examples are ones that have been recently adopted or that don't need it. But so one is the Glenwood Refinement Plan area. That's a fairly new section of code. Other than potentially reformatting it to be consistent with the rest of the code we developed, I wouldn't envision getting into rewriting sections of the Glenwood. Another area is some of the TSP implementation stuff you just recently saw. There's, in my mind, no need to go back in and rehash a lot of that. Another example might be the recreational marijuana provisions that were fairly recently adopted. To not break those kind of sections, we go back open and rehash what the provisions should be, but just figure out how they can incorporate it into the other sections of the code. So I've identified some what I call external forces or drivers for the process. There's a lot of regulations we have to implement through our development code that dictate how development is done in the city. Federal and state requirements are at the top of that list. A lot of our requirements for whether it's stormwater requirements or wetlands, floodplains, some of the transportation elements come from either federal or state requirements that we have to implement. So those are going to help frame how or what we can update in our code. Many of you may be aware of or familiar with the statewide planning goals themselves. So those are mandates from the state level that we have to build into our comprehensive plan and then implement through our development code. We do have our own comprehensive plan policies. So as I just mentioned, those comprehensive plan policies implement state planning rules. I don't see as this process changing our comprehensive plan policies. I see the code implementing our existing comprehensive plan policies. So the idea is to stay policy neutral in that respect. So we're not trying to revision or take a new fresh look at what our comprehensive plan says about what we want our community to be long term, but that we ensure through the code development process that any code we do have or that come up with every draft is consistent with our existing policies. That's an important component. We can't create new code that isn't consistent with our comprehensive plan policies. So that'll be something that I will have to make sure all the checks and balances are there. The last couple of quick examples are our building code and the fire code. These types of codes are typically, the building code is either a statewide adopted board in building code that we adopt locally or international building codes, and with the fire code. They're not so much Springfield specific. And I do have a quick example where I want to highlight where, from a planning perspective, there could be a project that works. And in this case, this is an existing industrial building in the city of Springfield. It's on industrial zone property. We had a recent inquiry that a user that wanted to lease this space and move into it, that it's a pretty well-known manufacturer of exploding targets that they make. And so, but from a purely planning and zoning standpoint, this property is zoned industrial and it's an industrial building. But from a fire code standpoint, that use would not be allowed, even though this is a fully sprinkler building, based on the construction type and the type of manufacturing that that user wanted to do in this building, the fire code would preclude it. So we can have lists of permitted uses and those types of things, industrial manufacturing, but there's other things that come into play sometimes that isn't always directly impacted by the planning. So some of the objectives I mentioned, and you'll see a list here in just a second. The council themselves recognize within their discussions and creating their objectives that some of them are inherently conflict with others. So one example is the flexibility of having the opportunities within the code to do different things, but also building uncertainty for developers that they know what they're getting into or know what they can and can't do. There's ways of dealing with this. I think, you know, one quick example is having a two-tracked kind of situation where you have a set of clear and objective standards, and then if you and want to do something outside of that track, that there's a flexible path as well. So building in mechanisms like that.
Which is what we currently have, correct?
Yeah, in a lot of cases. You know, sometimes the clear and objectives track may be pretty narrow, so there may be opportunity to open those clear and objectives up a little bit. And then looking at ways to not necessarily require variances, but having the flexibility built into an alternative track that doesn't necessarily require another application for a variance or something like that. Other objectives, one, to have an attractive community, but also one of the messages I've heard consistently from the council is that they want to minimize the amount of regulation we have, make it more clear, easier to use, but also essentially, in my words, not have as much regulation, basically. So how do you balance that with also ensuring that we maintain a beautiful community, the livability aspects of our community, a place that people do want to live, work, or develop, or those types of things. So that's, a balancing act, figuring that out. Having quick review times versus having opportunity for community input. The number one planning goal with the state is citizen involvement. So it's number one for a reason. within the statewide framework, there's things that are considered land use decisions, and there's things that aren't considered land use decisions, and that has to do with using discretion or not, and it kind of goes back to that clear and objective standards, those types of things. Trying to streamline the process for development is one of the key objectives, but figuring out how to balance that with the opportunity for the community to be involved in those decisions where appropriate as well is one of those challenges we'll be working to build into this project. Another consideration that we'll be looking at is the cost of development. A lot of this, in my mind, focuses around infrastructure primarily, but also, you know, I think most of us in the room recognize the housing market right now, land values, and the cost for housing is really high right now. So what does it take to build new housing, and how can we create affordable housing, those types of things? The infrastructure plays a key role into that. So evaluating our development standard requirements, this could be related to street standards, some of that you just saw with the TSP implementation, but also the process. So the predictability of the process, or even just the timelines associated with processes. Again, it might go back to the clear and objective standards or alternative tracks and that type of thing, depending on how long a process is going to take for development, can impact the cost as well. So with that, this is the list of the objectives that the City Council has highlighted. We can go into these in more detail. These were built from discussions with them and their ideas about what they want to see come out of this process. And then lastly, from these objectives, I developed a purpose statement that the council has endorsed. We've seen this and given direction for us to move forward with. So with that, that's all my presentation. I'm happy to answer questions and talk about any more of this that you'd like.
Yes, Commissioner Bose.
On your conceptual timelines, I take it that your plan is on the three groupings to have final approval for each grouping individually?
Correct.
All right.
I'm going to just go back to that slide really quick, and I can expand on the answer a little bit if you'd like. So there is some question about what pieces of the code we can adopt without having an impact on all the other sections of the code. So that's going to be figuring out along the way type of thing. But that is the concept at this point, is that and the other piece of that is, anytime we do a code amendment, it applies broadly across the city. There's huge noticing requirements, and those are quite expensive. So we want to figure out strategically where we can adopt big sections of the code. If we can only have three Measure 56 notices that, you know, that there's thousands of notices that get mailed out that are expensive to do, you know, we want to minimize those costs associated with doing those notices. So finding those pieces and in my term, chunks of code that can be adopted. But the idea is to do sections up front and then move on to the other sections, and you can do it in a staggered fashion.
So parallel tracking. Go ahead.
And one other question. We've had taken recent steps to move material from the procedures manual into the code. And I guess that is a process that could continue. Are you contemplating tying that in with the process that you're undertaking on code itself?
So the short answer is yes. And I think what you're referring to is the engineering design specifications manual, all those. So when we look at this process, we will incorporate what needs to come out of the EDSPM, which is whatever the acronym stands for, but essentially Engineering Design Standards Manual. There are sections of that manual that do need to be brought back into the code, and we will be incorporating those pieces into this process.
Yeah, there's a couple that we've looked at already, but indications were that there's more to follow.
That's right. And you saw some of that with the recent TSP implementation.
Exactly.
And there, you're right, there is a bit more that needs to be done, and we will incorporate that.
Yes.
I think we did that with the Glenwood standards too, the street standards in the code. But
correct.
One thing I'd like to see in regard to this is updates just as often as you can get them to us practically. and including provision of drafts if you have them in whatever timely manner. I'm used to working with drafts. I know that finality is a nice goal, but I'd rather get the gist of something in a short period of time rather than wait for all the I's and T's to be crossed and dotted.
Okay.
So if possible.
Yeah, that's great feedback. Just to give you an idea, we intend to regularly go back to the city council on a quarterly basis. It's just kind of the timeframe we intend to keep them updated on officially. We could build in something like that with this body, but the other thing is we can have you on our interested parties list, and then we'll have a website so you can access materials as they're produced in draft form and they're available to the public, that kind of thing. So even if we're not coming back to you in the near future on a matter, but there's materials you can review and there's opportunities for that.
But still, it would be better to get push us instead of us having to go to the webpage and suss them out, if possible.
Okay.
Couple of questions that I have. The reality of a code rewrite like this is huge. And as you know, I mean, I sat on the development advisory committee with other folks for a while, and I understand fully you saying, you know, this is not this code rewrite is not by committee. It will be driven by input and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. Question for you related to being adverse to change. Staff, a lot of times, they spend their lives in this code and use it every day. And if there's a substantial change to the code, it will impact staff. How are you dealing with getting staff on board and their inclusion in the process so that there's buy-in here, and so that whatever you the ultimate output is, staff have embraced it and are excited about its implementation and what it's going to mean for ease of process and so forth. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
And it'll be a challenge, I think, in some respects. I'm taking direction from the city council. They want this done, so we have to figure out how to do that. So we will have an internal advisory committee of staff involved with the process to provide input from not only the planning and building and engineering departments, but other city departments as well, including fire and economic development, those types of areas. So having the broad, not only city input, but and then going outside the city as well, all the other jurisdictions that it could impact, utilities, school districts, all those types of components. So, and getting the buy-in from staff, which I think is really the heart of your question, and the adversity to change. And I've experienced this before. I personally try and embrace change. I think it's inevitable, but you get comfortable with things and you know stuff. And if we change it all, then we're not gonna know how it's gonna turn out. So I don't have an exact silver bullet type of answer to your question. I think it's gonna be a process that we'll all go through to see how the changes are going to be envisioned to result in development that's acceptable. And honestly, everybody might not feel really warm and fuzzy about it at the end of the day. And we'll just have to come to grips with the idea that whatever this body recommends the city council ultimately for approval and that the city council ultimately adopts is what we will have to work with. One of the questions that the city council posed a week ago when they heard this presentation was, what about the implementation of it? Because there's internal processes that also happen almost outside the code of implementing the code.
Absolutely.
So part of the idea is that creating a more clear and objective code is that there won't be as much room for the interpretation or the need for interpretation. Honestly, our code is very dated now. It doesn't work in a lot of respects, so it almost requires the interpretation to make it feasible to do development today. So with a modernized code, one that's more clear, it'll be easier to use to the point where it won't necessitate the same level of interpretation or trying to figure out how to make it work along the way.
That's a great segue to my next question. As we worked through the development advisory group, one of the things that we recognized with planners and architects and engineers and folks from that deal with across multiple municipalities are there are models that have been adopted that are very different than the Springfield model that may have some real advantages that may look very different. Is part of your process to, as you're gathering information, to go out and survey what's out there and what works and what doesn't work, so you can bring that 50,000 foot view to play as you begin to look at a rewrite of our code? I think that's incredibly important. An incredibly important piece because, you know, lots of very smart folks throughout the state have spent many, many hours working on this exact same issue. Now, each city or municipality may have some distinct, specific, site-specific things that they have that are different, much different than what we are faced with in Springfield. But bringing that collective wisdom to bear as a guide, a guidepost to help guide us through this process. If you haven't already done that, I'm sure that's something maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So there has been some initial look at different types of code. I know Greg Mott, who most of you probably know, he had done a fair bit of work on presenting those different ideas to the city council, at least. I'm not sure about this body. So there's form-based code, smart code. There's our typical Euclidean zoning that we primarily have here in the city. Most cities, honestly, still have that as the basis for their code. There's, in my mind, more and more cities, especially in Oregon. Oregon's a little bit unique, but not entirely. More of a hybrid code model where my professional opinion is we're never, especially in Oregon, but for Springfield, is we're never really going to get away from the Euclidean zoning basis for our code. We're still going to have the neighborhoods, the large residential zones that are residential zones. They don't want a commercial hub necessarily in the middle of some established neighborhood. But that could be different. So the hybrid nature that I talk about is one that could be different for newly developing greenfield development. So if there's, you know, it's not impacting existing established neighborhoods and that kind of thing, that there's opportunity to do more mixed use and potentially form-based code and that type of thing. I think Springfield's code is already a hybrid code. An example of that is the Glenwood Zone. That's a refinement plan. That has smart code, form-based code ideas built into it. It's mixed use, both vertical and horizontally. The Main Street Corridor Plan that's just kicking off now, as well as the Downtown Design Standards. Both of those types of projects are going to look at the Main Street Corridor, especially probably transects of different things. Main Street's so unique that it ebbs and flows among the feel as you move down that corridor. So how can you build that into the code? I agree with you that it's important to take that high-level look. And just based on my experience, I've been researching codes for nearly two decades and have used different forms of code. You know, a quick example, too, the state of Oregon has developed a model code for small cities.
Right.
We actually used that at the city of Bend as the initial starting point. Bend has grown quite a bit. It wasn't really a small city even back then. But just in terms of the formatting and the structure of it, that was the starting point of that code at the time. But I think for Springfield, we need to find something that works for us.
Absolutely.
And so the ease of use piece of it, I think, is really important. If council's made it very clear, they don't want to have, it could be what I call a mom and pop developer type person that wants to partition their property and build a house on the back or whatever it might be, but they shouldn't necessarily have to go hire a professional planner to help them weigh their way through the code to figure out if and how they can do it. They might need an engineer ultimately to help with their partition plat or something like that, but being able to understand upfront what you can and can't do is important. So using things like more graphics or tables and diagrams and things, more, even just more white space in the formatting of the code itself.
Well, you know, another thing is really tough with code, and I'm professionally trained as a procurement person in the state of Oregon, retired. But, you know, when we used to deal with AIA documents and you had the general conditions and then you had supplemental conditions that were referenced in the general condition. And, you know, as a contractor, or a developer, if you can tie the code together in a way so that you're not pointing, you can go walk through it and say, this is what we need to do specific to this issue, without having to go to another code point reference and then that prefaces, or so for the school district, which I worked for 36 years, we developed our own general conditions and rather than adopting the AIA conditions, and we had no supplemental conditions. They were part of our general conditions. That's an example of streamlining a process and making it easier, so that the contractor or the developer knows, they can read it, they know it's there, and it is what it is. I think that's a great point. I would just also say, another hat I wear is I'm on the Willamette Lane board. I'm a member of the Willamette Lane board, and this highly will impact your Team Springfield member agencies. Mm-hmm. The parks, Willamette Lane, because the city is not, they don't have their own park district. I mean, Willamette Lane is a special district. The school district, this is highly going to affect the school district as they look to develop new schools in the future, or they need to renovate existing schools, and your utility district. So however you go through this process, I think it's incredibly important that there is a high level of integration with those folks, so that they aren't standing at a public hearing, legislative public hearing, explaining to the Planning Commission why this code doesn't work for them. Right? I would hope that the process is such that the end product aligns well for everyone. They understand what the requirements are, and they are acceptable. They accept those as being a positive move forward. Sure. So that's just my take on it.
That's great.
So, other questions? Yes.
Just to sort of tie in with what you were just speaking about, and in addition to your width and breadth of experience, will you also be pulling input from, like, the Home Builders Association on the residential, the local realtors that actually are involved in that industry, the day in, the day out, that see those struggles? Is that something that you're planning on, is getting feet on the ground information input before it goes to public hearing?
Correct. So Home Builders Association, I've worked with Ed before quite a bit in the past. The realtors is another good one. So we envision involving those, in my mind, kind of more topic specific and more technical, or they're working within the code more on a regular basis than the general public. I see them involved at the audits phase. So we would bring home builders in, well, this point is not gonna work on the PD, but at the audit phase, say for the housing piece, we bring them in at the front end of that to help do the audit piece. And then take it more broadly out to the general public towards the adoption phase. It would be prior to the actual adoption phase, but then the community outreach piece prior to the actual adoption. So the answer is yes, we do plan on bringing those parties on and early in the process.
Yes.
One of the concerns that I had earlier, and that concern has been somewhat eased with the information you provided, stating that a new and refreshed code will not necessarily mean a shorter code.
Right.
Because some of the conversations that we had with Greg Mott before we left, because they were very preliminary conversations, and there was discussion about what the possible different formats could possibly be. One of the concerns that I had is that various code requirements could be stated by inference rather than being specifically stated. And I think there's a possibility there, and we've had experience in the past of having processes where we've had to backtrack because of concerns about whether we're legally airtight or not. Mm-hmm. And so that was a concern about having it stated in such a way that that possibility doesn't exist, that there's a challenge because there's an inference that could be interpreted in different ways.
Right, and that's a great point. We've worked with our legal counsel extensively as a recent example on the TSP implementation code portions. So having legal counsel on the project team is key to make sure, like you said, we're airtight, that we're not creating a situation where we're going to be appealed or create problems for ourselves down the road. The clear and objective piece that's kind of the big buzzword these days is we have to meet that challenge. So figuring out exactly how to be clear and objective isn't always mean short, you know, and not a lot of words. So I brought this point up to the council specifically because even just from a page count standpoint of the code, if we add more white space to the pages and use more diagrams or figures and tables, it could potentially add to the page count. Their real intent, as they expressed to me, is they want just in general less regulations. But if that ends up being a longer code to do less because we're explaining it more thoroughly in a clear way, then so be it.
Okay.
Yes. As I've just heard you say right now, it sounded as if you were speaking of public input being more towards the end of the process during adoption and not initially. I find that a little problematic considering it was said earlier, you said earlier that citizen input is really the number one goal for the state. So I think that generally a more robust output throughout the program toward the public might be more desirable than in the adoption stage.
Okay. So my assumption is this commission serves as a CCI, and this is a legislative process, and so my assumption would be at some point forthcoming would be a plan that would come forward to the CCI saying this is how we're going to segment this thing. This is what the community involvement piece looks like for us to review before we get to that stage. So that's forthcoming.
So that was going to be in my next steps for you guys, is that we are working on that plan now and do anticipate bringing that back to this body for approval, or the CCI, this body in that capacity. We are going back to the City Council on October 1st for a follow-up meeting with them where we will present more details to them about what we're putting together in those plans and then bring it to the CCI for approval of that plan.
So
that's great.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I think it would be any of you who are interested in attending that, that council meeting on October 1st, that would be something good to do. The other thing you might want to do is just share that information that is going to be shared with the council just electronically with the Planning Commission. So we know what's being shared with the council. That will prepare us then when you do come back to the commission to discuss the CCI in more detail.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
And
yes.
And at that time, just to address Commissioner Craigley's comment, is that we can have those conversations about how exactly that happens at that time.
Good. Commissioner Truman.
Yeah, so I understand that one of the main objectives here is to make it, as you said, more clear and objective, and reduce the number of restrictions and regulations. But one thought I have is, when you're going through an entire code rewrite, it makes sense to me that at some point you'd run into something that maybe you'd want to be stricter on, or there'd be a situation where you sacrifice reducing one requirement or regulation, and in doing so, you need to buff another. Is that true?
In general, I would say that could be definitely the case. And just maybe a quick example is, say our low-density residential zones, you know, the majority of our neighborhoods are in today,
yes,
don't really allow commercial uses. So you can do some home occupation type stuff, that kind of thing, but some of our old neighborhoods, and you can see it around downtown and historic district, have little markets, and they could either be on the corner or even mid-block. I mean, that was an old historic pattern of development that happened in Springfield and other places. So the potential, say we open that back up to where there's neighborhoods that you could do a little convenience store on the corner or something more proximate to a neighborhood, so they don't have to drive a half a mile or something to a big neighborhood, a big grocery store or something. So anyway, as an example, that we could reduce regulations, say, okay, let's allow a certain commercial use or market in a low-density residential zone, but at the same time then beef up other standards to mitigate that there won't be impacts, negative impacts from doing that. And so that could be size limitations or locational requirements, or, and this is just a very off the top of my head idea, but I think so, as an example of what you're saying, it's true. So you're right, we could loosen things up, but at the same time put other provisions in place.
So one thought I have on that is existing circumstances. So I know that in most cases when new laws or regulations come about and there's existing circumstances, it's typically grandfathered in, but then that comes with situations. Well, we're looking at one tonight where if somebody's not using a building for a little while, then it reverts and it needs to go to the new rules, and then things need to change because it needs conformance. So is it a goal to minimize the situations in Springfield where we'll see possibly new regulation come in or changes to regulations that make existing circumstances not in conformance, and therefore create potentially sticky situations for businesses or homeowners in Springfield? And the other thing I was interested in there is, if we are looking to minimize that, how are we looking to minimize that in this process?
Right. So, and I think when you're talking about the existing conditions or uses, I'm thinking of like non-conforming uses. Is that kind of what you have in mind?
Yeah, not currently non-conforming, but something that might become non-conforming as a result.
Right. So there's different ways of handling that. And I'm actually doing some research right now, like Commissioner James talked about, you know, the higher level, how do other places do it and what are different ways of doing things. But doing some research on how not to create a whole bunch of non-conforming uses when we adopt a new code. One of the questions the city council had as well had to do with code enforcement and compliance issues. So we don't want to create a big nightmare backlog or new log of cases of code compliance cases for our code enforcement officers to pursue now that we change some code provision. So I would see as part of this project intentionally making sure we don't do that. And there's ways of just wording language that anything prior to the date of adoption of this new ordinance that existed remains conforming. You know, doesn't, could be rebuilt if it's, you know, a setback issue or just a use issue or whatever the issue might be. I'm trying to think, there was kind of a second part to your question.
I was mostly just asking if that would be a situation and how that situation could be dealt with if you're looking to minimize it. And it sort of explains it. If you're looking into other areas and trying to, that's something focusing on researching other areas and trying to apply that to Springfield. Because I know you look at it a lot more than I do, but I know that each city has its own personality and things that happen more often in that city than others, and Springfield will once again have its own personality in that way. And I want to make sure that, you know, a cookie cutter regulation that works everywhere else doesn't significantly impact a lot of our constituents in Springfield for like you said, non-conforming uses, so.
I think it's a great point. I think it's a great thing for us to be aware of through the process to keep in our minds to not create those situations.
Thank you.
Good.
Other questions? Hearing none, well, I'd just like to thank Mark for presenting to us tonight. This is a, like I said, a long-term process. I think you heard tonight from the commission their interest in the process ongoing, the importance of communicating regularly and providing updated information. I think, you know, that would be an ongoing process. This is, even if it's broken into segments, when you adopt those code provisions, each of those processes is going to be a huge public process, and so this is it's going to be, you know, in the next, I'll say 2 to 5 years, there will be a lot of community activity around this code rewrite. It takes a little time to get some steam and get things cranking, but you're headed that direction now, so. Thanks for your work. Your background is incredible. And, you know, I know that they went outside and looked for someone to do this and really didn't find anyone, and then realized that they had some internal talent that was very well suited to this. And listening to your background and experience makes me feel like you're the right person for this task. So thank you for your commitment to this process. And,
talk to me in 2.5 years.
Yeah. And we look forward to the process as it moves forward. So, all right.
Thank you.
Okay. We stand adjourned.